Good afternoon. Hello. My name is Jack Cunningham, and I'm just an Ohioan. I wanted to start out this particular episode with just a few words about what's at stake. There's a lot at stake in our political world, and I am very concerned that not enough people are taking it seriously. With the incoming Trump administration and continued lobbying of far-right groups and organizations, there's a lot to be concerned about. Just as much, if not more so, there's a lot to be hopeful about in having an opportunity to get involved with the organizations and groups, as well as individuals who are going to be working their tails off to counter what is going to come. As such, in the state of Ohio, I would like to shout out a few of the following organizations who are on the front lines doing everything they could. Honesty for Ohio Education, Abortion Forward, Policy Matters Ohio, ACLU Ohio, Common Cause Ohio, Ohio Families Unite, Ohio Women's Alliance, Ohio Federation of Teachers, Red, Wine, and Blue, Love Boldly, Urge Ohio, Ohio Citizen Action, and many more. I was inspired to make this podcast because a lot of people want to hear young voices. A lot of people want to see young people being involved. And as such, I created this podcast in the hopes of, one, having my voice heard, and two, having the means of developing a relationship with people who I care about, who I want to advocate for, and who I can work to defend as things come down and unfold politically. There are a lot of people out there who are counting on people like myself to not just advocate, but provide a means of actionable items to say, hey, we want to take a stand and say enough is enough. There are so many issues coming, not just through the state of Ohio, but now nationally as well, that are going to have a severely negative impact on many people. Minority groups, disabled people, people like myself, LGBTQIA groups. Not groups, LGBTQIA people, our whole community is at risk right now. Because when you go after one part of the community, you go after every single aspect of the community as a whole. What I'm so grateful for and thankful for is that people are working together to unite and say, we are not going to take whatever is coming lightly. With that being said, though, there are a lot of groups out there who, from my perspective as an Ohioan, are not doing enough in uniting together and making a broad coalition to resist what is coming. All of the groups that I mentioned, they are a part of the role that needs to be done to counter what's going on. I believe that there needs to be greater cohesion among these groups. I believe that these groups are the solid foundation of the front line to correctly lobby for the causes and issues that need to be addressed. As such, I also believe that the Democratic Party has to have a greater role in working with these organizations and uniting with these organizations to make that foundation stronger in the means of advocating and taking a stand for people. Now, I believe the Democratic Party as a whole is the best conduit for promoting good progress, just as much as I recognize that there are a lot of faults that the party has. Now, don't get me wrong. I believe that the Democratic Party has the best solid foundational structure for the apparatus in uniting all of these different groups and coalitions together. What I do have issue with is some members of the Democratic Party either not taking what is coming seriously enough, not advocating properly for the progressive causes that I believe are critical, that we need to make sure that our living condition is better. Also, messaging what we are about in a means that people of all backgrounds, especially people that we have lost to the Republican Party, in a digestible and easy means for people to not just hear, but a means for people to respect. I have a lot of people I know who voted for the opposing party, and I believe that what it came down to was respect. I think that some people don't respect the party because the party either hasn't communicated sufficiently to them. I don't think that there is a deep relationship that the party has with many of not just the people who voted for the Republican candidates, but also those who are very progressive and those who want to get down on the actual issues rather than just talk about things that are not on the front lines of American people right now. From seeing what's going on, I wholeheartedly think that the first thing that we need to do to counter what's going on is have a DNC chair that is someone who advocates not just for progressive policies and candidates, but who has done the work to make sure people are fired up and have the means of uniting behind all of these different organizations, not just in the state of Ohio. I know that there are many comparable organizations all across the United States. But in the context of Ohio, there was a lot of focus on the major cities, which that's great. There's a lot of people in the major cities that need the help of the Democratic Party. And we need to help further support the apparatus in all 88 counties. So for those of you who are listening who are not in Ohio, Ohio has 88 unique counties. The Democratic Party has its main emphasis in the counties where we have Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, Dayton, Toledo. I have, just so you know, my background, where I come from, I grew up in Licking County. I also grew up in Cuyahoga County, but for 12 to 18, my family lived in Licking County. My family continues to live there, and as such, I have a great relationship with people there. There's the Licking County Democratic Party. There's the Licking County Young Dems. There are a lot of great people in Licking County who are actively working on bringing the party to its maximum potential or working to get there. And as such, working to share candidates, issues, causes, things that people in that county are particularly concerned about. What I see that the Democratic Party of Ohio needs to do, at least from my perspective, is further support and invest in these rural counties to say, hey, we are here, we are not going anywhere, we have not abandoned you, and we continue to fight and advocate for issues you care about. Historically, Ohio has had a lot of Democratic support in rural counties, especially in Appalachia, up until the 2016 election. Now, each county is relatively different. Each county has, you know, its own unique circumstance, its own culture, its own population. But those counties are united by a broad culture, just depending on where you are in the state. I specifically focus on Appalachian counties at the moment because these counties are ones that we need to get back to have a strong, solid blue Democratic Party. Donald Trump, for everything that he is, he found a way to connect and resonate with these people. And as such, they continue to vote for him because he was able to channel something that I believe the Democratic Party needs to do better on about how exactly our policies are going to make people in Appalachia's lives better. A lot of investment has gone away. Ohio is still a Rust Belt state. We are not seeing a lot of the benefits that we might see in some of our major cities going into our rural communities. I don't think it's strange to say that because of the messaging or lack thereof, the Republican Party has had a solid trifecta in Ohio government for many years, well over a decade. For example, the Ohio Supreme Court has been in control of the Republicans since 1986, which we're getting close to 40 years of that. What's super concerning to me is that we have had a ballot initiative in Ohio to work against gerrymandering and do away with the means of hyperpartisan gerrymandering. We could have had a commission established with 5 Democrats, 5 Independents, 5 Republicans that would have prevented the continued supermajority that we see in Ohio government of Republicans. Now, what we see that initiative failed. And as such, we also have an Ohio Supreme Court that is now 6-1, solidly far-right Republican Supreme Court, and that's going to have a profound impact on many people who live here. I'm not sure if you all know, there are a lot of bills being proposed and being discussed right now in committee throughout the Ohio House, the Ohio Senate, that would have a profound impact on Ohioans. One of the biggest things that we're seeing right now is voter suppression bills. I want to especially shout out Ohioans Against Extremism. They had two online Zoom meetings discussing what is happening through Ohio State House, and I attended the first one, and I just want to say how grateful I am that they had that event. It was on December 3rd. We had members who joined all across the state, and we had Rachel Coyle take the lead on discussing that. Rachel, you're awesome. Thank you very much for doing that. There were many others whose names escapes me right now, but I want people to be recognized for the good work that they do. Going back to the voter suppression bills, Senate Bill 324, it's... Now, I'm not exactly sure if it's still in the Senate or if it went into... No, it's still in committee right now. Senate Bill 324 would require citizenship proof to register to vote. And in revising election law, it would ban drop boxes as well as require a more extreme detailed verification process for petition circulators, which would continue to negatively impact people's ability to gather signatures for petitions to change Ohio's constitution. Also, for those of you who don't know, even if you live in Ohio, we've had many elections these past few years, but in last year we had a special election where thankfully we prevented the state house and the far right members of our government from circumventing the will of Ohioans and require a 60% threshold for getting ballot initiatives passed, as well as requiring all signatures coming from 88 counties compared to what we have now. Now, thankfully, we still have our citizen ballot initiative process that is feasible. That is, if you have millions of dollars to help build this coalition. Regardless, the current ballot initiative process, you need to gather signatures in 44 of the 88 counties, which is doable. We've had the Reproductive Health Care Amendment pass. We've had recreational marijuana pass through this. All of which, though, is still at risk of some of the far-right people in government. Regardless, though, we have other bills as well. There is House Bill 552, which will require citizenship verification before registering a voter, limit who and how ballots can be returned, monthly Secretary of State citizenship checks, Attorney General referral if no reply after two attempts, and citizenship becomes public record. Now, I don't think it's hard to understand why all of this is a concern, but all of these things are roadblocks to prevent people from getting to vote and making sure that their voices are heard. One of the biggest tenets of democracy is we have to have our voices heard, and as such, that the biggest way we can do that is through voting. Ohio, unfortunately, has had a lot of issues with getting people registered to vote. We don't have same-day voter registration. We actively purge voters from our voter rolls when people don't vote in, what is it, every election? Every other election? It's a very small window where if you don't vote in that window, whether that be one or two elections, then your voting record is purged. And as such, that's a hindrance to many people who only vote like during the presidential years, which is a whole other discussion as well. That is something that we need to do to work to be better on. And I think that the Democratic Party, as well as all these organizations, have done a decent job at describing how this is an important thing. But for me, just as an Ohioan, I don't see that on like a day-to-day basis. Like, I don't see that in the news. I don't see that in, you know, circles. I have to really, really hunt for it, which that's fine. Like, I, in my career, in my passion for being an advocate, I do try to search through all the information I can find. I try to make sure that I'm familiar with what's going on. But to the ordinary, everyday Ohioan who's either focused on just their job, their family, who don't really have the time, energy, or want to look at this information, it's really hard to find or to at least understand. I think it's a bit of both the fault of the individual who's apathetic, as well as the people, groups, and organizations who want to do this work, who want to be advocates. It's just like a relationship. It's like you have to have a means of connection. You have to have a means of mutual respect, and that's something where I think people are really lacking in seeing. When you are able to meet people where they're at, when you're able to communicate with them in a way that they respect, that's a whole other conversation compared to going around saying, hey, I need your signature for this issue, or I'm so-and-so and I'm running for da-da-da-da-da. I think people are so aware of how surface level some of these conversations are, to the point where they're like, yeah, no, I'm okay, I'm all good, or I don't really know what's going on, I don't want a part of this, or, you know, people can find all kinds of reasons not to be involved. And I think that it really comes down with a lack of having that connection. When you don't have that connection, what is at stake becomes so much more severe, to the point where once that policy or project is implemented, there's a really, really hard time to unite and coalesce to counter what's going on. I want to get back to some of these bills that we are seeing. For example, there's House Bill 686, which bans public colleges from using employment or admissions applications that ask for preferred pronouns. This is an attack on the trans community, to a lesser extent the LGBTQIA community, but it's still a threat and a lack of respect for people who want to be identified in the way that they are. House Bill 556, it allows school librarians and teachers to be charged with felonies for promoting or providing quote-unquote obscene material. Who knows what that quote-unquote obscene material is? I don't know who determines that. My biggest fear is that there's some crazy far-right person who's like, yeah, no, I don't want this book about LGBT inclusivity to be in the to be applicable, even if it's just a reference to LGBTQIA people, or say it's not Christian enough, or say it's not. I really don't know how you would describe this obscene material, because to me, obscene is, you know, really, really adult, graphic, you know, that is obscene, like gore, all of the things that I would imagine a typical, not typical, but like a average person you see day to day would quantify or qualify obscene. I'm sure that we all can agree that that's not appropriate for children. However, when you try to go after librarians and teachers who want to educate and inform students on, of course, grade specific and appropriate materials, that's very harmful to that child's education. Book bans historically are a precipice for further extremism and further reductions in education quality. Something to be on the lookout for. Senate Bill 295 would allow the state to close certain local public schools. How does that make sense? Senate Bill 304 creates educational savings accounts, which is the next step after universal vouchers. I don't know if you live in Ohio or not, but Ohio is one of the states that has implemented a school voucher program which takes public tax dollars into the hands of private institutions. In fact, public tax dollars now in Ohio are being sent to construct new private religious institutions. Which, if that's not a huge slap in the face to the separation of church and state, I don't know what is. Now, this is another interesting one. Senate Bill 226 bans immigrants and others from holding property within 25 miles of pipelines, energy plants, and more. I don't know how that is a priority for us. We have a lot of Ohioans in poverty. We have a lot of issues with energy costs. We have a lot of issues with health, healthcare, fracking in our public parks, the lessened quality of our water and air. Like, these are things that should be discussed through our state house, but it's not. Which is another reason why it's a shame that that initiative to implement citizen-led redistricting failed. That's another issue, because we're still going to have a supermajority Senate. We, thankfully, after this election, broke the supermajority in the House, so that's hopefully going to stop a lot of the most extreme legislation coming through. With that being said, though, all of these varying pieces of legislation that I've just spoken about theoretically have a means of getting to Governor DeWine's desk if they were to go through the committees and floor votes all in all. There are a few things that Ohioans can do at the moment to try to counter what's going on through their own voices, calling representatives, writing testimony. However, that process is not something I believe a lot of Ohioans know about, something I don't think a lot of Ohioans are comfortable doing yet, something that, and you know, that's the whole other thing. It's about what people are comfortable doing or not. Some people do want to give phone calls to the representatives and say, hey, please support this or please oppose that. I don't know if y'all are familiar with this, but when people do that to federal representatives or senators, most of the time their calls or messages go unanswered due to the quantity of messages that come through. However, that is not seen on the same level or metric that you would in state houses, because a lot of people don't focus their energies on state issues or candidates comparable to federal races and candidates. So that is one of the biggest things that we as citizens can do at the moment. Right now, Ohio is in a lame duck session, which, if you don't know what a lame duck session is, it essentially is a majority party tends to save the most controversial bills for the current session, and they do so when it is after the federal election, in the most recent case, the 2024 presidential election, and the Senate races, House races, all of that. And it's when people are the most exhausted from politics. And for this time period, it is November 12th to December 19th. It's to be determined. There are people who say that the State House is going to end their business on the 17th, the 18th, and 19th, which is why I say it's to be determined. But the session of Ohio's government is going to end roughly around that time. And so whatever bills get to Governor DeWine's desk by that time is going to be implemented into law, and those that don't make it, well, they have to go back to the very beginning if they want to be considered legislation. Now, I mentioned supermajority, and I'm not sure if you all know what supermajority means in this context. Right now, Ohio's government, Republicans have the supermajority in our Senate and our House of Representatives. We have 33 senators, 26 are Republicans, 7 Democrats. We have 99 representatives, 67 of which are Republicans and 32 Democrats. As I mentioned previously, we have thankfully broken the supermajority in the House. However, that is something, how do I want to describe it? It's bittersweet. It's sweet in that we have able to break this supermajority control. At the same time, it's sad in that the far right still controls so much of these candidates, not candidates, but these elected officials, and are able to get away with a lot of horrible legislation. the biggest issue that we have in messaging is that a lot of these issues that Ohioans see come from state government just as much, if not more so, than the national government. Most people direct their energy and anger and frustration at the national federal government, and not enough so at the state government, which has been a boon to Republicans all across the country, not just in Ohio. We see this in Florida. We see this in many states in the Deep South, Texas. A lot of states and a lot of state Republicans know this and recognize this, and that's why they're able to get away with a lot of this. And that's what I wanted to kind of get back to regarding actionable items. Aside from lobbying, aside from making phone calls, writing letters, voting, there is a limited amount that people can do, at least right now, to take a stand. However, one of the biggest things that we still have in this state, and what I mentioned briefly, is citizen-led ballot initiatives. There are going to be some coming down the pipeline once again in the future. I'm not sure what those are exactly at the moment. But through citizen-led ballot initiatives, we were able to save reproductive health care in Ohio, as well as institute recreational marijuana in our state. And so, thankfully, the recreational marijuana program is already underway, and it's seen a lot of success so far. It's not comparable yet to states like Michigan or Colorado, but hey, Colorado and Michigan didn't get there immediately either. They had to take some time to get to where they're at now. Citizen-led ballot initiatives are some of the best things that we could do right now. The biggest issues and hindrances to that is you need multi-millions of dollars in income. Not income, but you need that base so that way you could pay the petitioners, you could pay the lawyers, you can pay the just the whole apparatus that's needed to see a successful ballot initiative done. It's comparable to like any campaign. Campaign manager, campaign treasurer, advisors, the whole deal. And a lot of that is something that I don't think some people consider as well. Most people, when they hear about initiatives, it's either when people go door-to-door to gather the signatures. They might hear about it in the news. You know, and like, all of that's fine and good. Most people do just sign the petition and whatnot and then carry on about their business. A lot of people are busy. A lot of people have other priorities. We are in such a unique time period in America right now where we have a convicted felon getting back into the White House. I've been recently checking out Blue Sky, establishing my own personal account there as well as just an Ohioan. And in so doing, I've found a lot of great people, new people who I've met, who are putting in the work into do a lot of the good work and advocacy that needs to be done. An example of which being Brandon West, a great advocate for LGBTQIA people in the state of Ohio. 8 days ago, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine signed an anti-transgender bathroom bill into law, and it's absolutely crushing to the community because it bans transgender staff, students, etc. from using the bathroom that aligns with their gender identity. Some people might not see that as a problem, but it's a huge problem. We all need to use the facilities, and as such, people shouldn't be banned from going to a specific place just because of their identity. To me, it's comparable to separating like bathrooms by race. We used to see a lot of that, especially in the Deep South, where people were separated by color for using certain bathrooms or whatnot. And seeing a comparable sense of that here, it's very concerning to me as a person, because we all just need to use the restroom. We all need to make use of the facilities. I don't see why this is the biggest deal for some people that it is. One of the other things that I have seen from Policy Matters Ohio, this came out 9 days ago, from 2022 to 2023, CEOs at Ohio's largest employers saw a 19.95% increase in their compensation. Workers saw a 0.45% decrease. When we talk about inflation, when we talk about the rise in cost of living, this is one of the biggest issues and contributions to that I see. CEOs, C-suite executives, and people at the very top have seen such a great increase in their wealth at the expense of workers and their quality of living. And that's one of the biggest things that I want the Democratic Party to do better about messaging is that we should say this is unacceptable. We should say that it is unacceptable and hopefully one day illegal for CEOs to see this huge rise in their income at the expense of workers. I do believe that with having only, what is it, a $7.25 an hour national minimum wage, no one can live off that. That is not sustainable. You know, and if the rate of inflation kept up from the minimum wage that it was in the 1960s, the minimum wage right now would be something like $25 an hour, $28 an hour. Which is amazing to see that we had such a relatively great quality of living for most people in the 60s and 70s. And to have that all be taken away by massive deregulation and money going to the top 1%. And that is what's at stake. That is another thing that we are seeing is when people are working harder and harder for lesser and lesser pay, that is something that needs to be addressed some way, shape, and form. There are great groups out there who are further advocating for Ohio, like I mentioned before. One of them, and this is something that I'm continuously learning about and have cautious support for, is ranked choice voting. The process by which instead of whoever gets the most vote, whoever gets the most votes wins, it offers people a new methodology of who they want to see elected. Now, people who I've never experienced what a ranked choice voting system is like, so I've never had my personal experience doing that. But from what I have seen in the research that I've seen, you out of, let's say, hypothetically, five candidates, you rank which candidate you want first into the next candidate. That's your second place, next candidate, third, fourth, fifth. And once that is all aggregated together, the person that's selected is the person that does get the most votes, but it's the person who gets the most votes that people can unite behind together in a manner that they seem fit. So it's not just necessarily, oh, this person was nominated, so it's not just one Democrat or one Republican or whatever structure. It offers a greater Democratic vote for people, so that way people can vote for a candidate that addresses the best issues or best causes that people as a whole believe in, which takes away, from my perspective, the power of the nominating committees, those who only want to see a certain select amount of people get into those positions. I have more research to do on that. I'm probably sure that I maybe botch one or two things on that, but that's one thing I want to be better about so I can convey that better. I share ranked choice voting with you because I think it's a new, better approach to how we vote, and I want to better understand that so I can look and see what kinds of things we can do to better our democracy. There's some other good news as well that I want people to be aware of. Rachel Baker's legislation to modernize the adoption process is now headed to Governor DeWine's desk, which it's so amazing to see because we want, at least I personally want to see families, new families come together. I believe it's important for all of the families out there who want to have children and those children who are in the foster system to have their forever homes. I think having a more streamlined, better process for that is going to be great for Ohio families. That's the other thing I want to do with this podcast. I want to bring attention to and address the good policies that are being proposed and implemented as well, because there are many policies and pieces of legislation out there that people need to be aware of. People need to be aware of how certain policies and things are beneficial to them. And as such, I believe that this is one of the best examples of that, at least in the state of Ohio. Nationally, we have seen a lot of good progress combating prescription drug prices with people who are on insulin and who are going through Medicaid. Their prescription costs are capped at $35 a month. compared to astronomically high prices to what they used to be. With Medicare having the ability to negotiate drug prices now, we have seen a lot of costs for retirees, seniors, who need their prescription drugs go way down. That is something that should be highlighted and promoted greatly through Democratic messaging that I'm not sure if people have seen or people resonated with that. But that's an example of good policy that people need to be aware of and say, hey, the Democratic Party delivered this for you, and that needs to be like big, bold, and spread across as many channels as possible, so that way people can be aware of the kind of good policies that we can achieve if we were given the means to do so. There are so many things that I can't wait to share with you about. There are so many things that we can do together. The biggest thing that I see, and what is at stake right now, if we do not unite, if we do not come together, that is our biggest failure. Because when we came together during Trump's first administration, we blocked a lot of really harmful and negative stuff. Now, the biggest issue with that is we were only able to do that on a national level. Statewide and in state governments, a lot of attention was not there, and as such, we have seen a lot of negative legislation come that has harmed hundreds of thousands of people, especially women, with the overturning of Roe v. Wade. We have so much work to do, and we have so much good trouble to do together. And I am so happy to be in this fight, like the rooster. Side note, the rooster is one of my greatest inspirations for doing this. He is someone who goes out to the state house and talks to these representatives right in their face with firsthand documentation on what's going on and bring attention to what they've done and try to get them to be accountable to that, to hold them accountable for that. That's one of the big things that I want to kind of do in conjunction with him and all of the other news organizations out there to draw attention to what is going on. My future as a 26-year-old is way up in the air in terms of how politics and national, statewide issues are going to affect me. With that being said, though, I believe that there is a huge potential for my generation to continue fighting the good fight and see how prior generations were able to overcome their turmoils and their issues to bring about a better way forward, to bring about a better quality of living. I have such respect and admiration for Bernie Sanders, AOC, and comparable leaders that have drawn attention to the fight of workers and working class families and really work to unite behind issues and causes that will benefit them. Because most of us are closer to poverty than we will ever get to having $1 million. And I don't think a lot of people are aware of that, or perhaps they are, because a lot of people are paycheck to paycheck. A lot of people are very, very close to losing their homes. Some people have to make a decision between whether or not they pay for their rent or pay for food. And that's not to say about when, if and when they have children. There are so many cost of living issues that are affecting us in Ohio that is not being addressed enough, and it's going to continue harming people. We have to have a great united front and a united effort to take a stand. And my call to action for you is I hope that you find an organization that you believe in, either in the state of Ohio or a national organization, to work to counter what is going on. I thank you very much for joining me. This is the first episode of Just an Ohioan. I'm really excited to see where this goes. And at the very least, I know in my heart that I have done one more good thing to try to get people to unite together and fight for the causes that not just I believe in, but causes that many people believe in, to better ourselves and our neighbors, support our friends and families. Because at the end of the day, that's what politics needs to do, is to take a stand and unite with people who have either been powerless before or who have never really had a means to stand up And as such, people are counting on people like myself, most importantly, other organizations like the Democratic Party and all these other nonprofits and advocacy groups, to take that stand. And so I'm counting on you to get involved in some way. Hey, even social media advocacy in its own way is a great step that you can do, because we need your voice. We need your help. We can't do this all by ourselves. And so I am very grateful for you for taking the time to listen, to get involved, and to take a stand. My name is Jack Cunningham. I'm just an Ohioan. I'm looking forward to continuing this podcast with you and seeing where things go. I hope you have a great rest of your day wherever you're at in the world. And I am so grateful for the good trouble we'll get up to together. Thank you very much. I hope you all have a great day. Take care, y'all.